Good morning and welcome to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Deborah Martinez. I'm also a reporter with KUNM's Public Health New Mexico project. In our reporting, we're looking to explore a wide range of public health issues in New Mexico, especially the impact of policy on people. That includes citizens, practitioners, and policymakers. We're proud to launch our project website today. It's publichealthnm.org. Today on the KUNM Call-In Show, we'll discuss the many facets of public health and ask, what is public health? It's not just the treatment and prevention of diseases. The public health field includes things like policy decisions, family planning, research, monitoring, and education. Joining us today are Jane Peacock, the director of the Public Health Division of the New Mexico Department of Health, also George Schroeder, Bernalillo County's Manager of Health and Social Services, and Lee Caswell, who's with Presbyterian Healthcare Services and on the board of the New Mexico Public Health Association. Welcome to you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, the public health field is vast, and if you take a look at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, their list of top 10 public health achievements of the 20th century, it is posted online at publichealthnm.org. You can get an idea. It includes things that we may think are obvious public health issues, vaccinations, control of infectious diseases, but there are other achievements too, like safer, healthier foods, and a decline in deaths from heart disease and stroke. Vaccinations are perhaps one of the most widely recognized achievements in public health, with health officials requiring children to be vaccinated early in life and before they enter the classroom. So, Jane, how has New Mexico fared in our efforts to get folks vaccinated against infectious diseases, those things like measles and mumps?
Deborah, I think New Mexico has been successful in our efforts to get people vaccinated overall. Nearly 72% of all children ages 19 to 35 months old were fully vaccinated last year, and this is higher than the U.S. average of 68.4%. We can always do better, remembering to get booster shots where indicated so that our children are fully vaccinated.
What about things like the flu and whooping cough? Are we doing all right there?
I think we're doing very well with the flu, working with our partners, with our pharmacies and everyone who's out to give people flu shots these days. They're making them very accessible. I think with whooping cough, as you know, that's also known as pertussis. We do have pockets in the state of families who have not been fully vaccinated. And unfortunately, this affects our herd immunity. And so because vaccinations are based on herd immunity, we think we could be stronger if everyone got their shots.
And herd immunity being everybody getting
yes.
it.
Right.
Like a herd of cattle, if you will. Well, Lee, can you explain the importance of vaccinations in overall health of communities?
Well, if we're the idea is to protect all, you know, as many people as we can, so you're not transmitting a disease to somebody else. And so that's the goal of our vaccinations. And we're really lucky in New Mexico that our Department of Health and our health care providers have done a great job and have organized to vaccinate really effectively. It's one of those measures that we score well on. I think adult immunizations, we could certainly really spend some time focusing there and increasing those. But.
Yeah, there was a story recently about the value of calling people. If you, you know, have the time to call them and remind them, it's time to get your flu shot or whatever it is, your exam. And that seems to be effective.
I think any one-on-one contact, you know, really treating people like humans and having some real dialogue with them is really important and effective.
And do those impacts go beyond just creating immunity against disease?
I'm not exactly sure what you...
Yeah. Well, the impacts of the vaccinations, it really is a... creates kind of an overall sort of healthy atmosphere.
Well, and if it's a part of a well child check, you know, you're looking at a lot of other things at the same time. So, yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay. Well, George, vaccinations are often required by government agencies above the county level where you work. But how do you see the impacts in Bernalillo County where we have the highest population?
Well, thank you. I think an important thing to note is that the New Mexico Department of Health collects the data about the rate of vaccinations, and they share that statewide, and that's really important data. In Bernalillo County, we support healthcare providers through a program called the Partners in Health, and right now some of the organizations that we're supporting are First Choice and First Nations, And they also offer vaccinations at their clinics as part of other checkups that people will receive. So that's just to say that the partners that we work with are doing a good job at vaccinations, and we support their work.
And we do have a link on our website to the DOH website for that information. And in addition to vaccines, water resource management, better sanitation systems over the last century have greatly increased public health, right? Lee, we're in the midst of yet another year of drought in our state. How does drought affect public health and sanitation?
I think the big issues you look at are quality of water and quantity of water. And we know that a lot of places in the state were dealing especially with quantity issues. And that affects an issue that is really dear to my heart and the work that we do at Presbyterian, which is related to increasing access to healthy, locally grown produce. And we know that the farmers are really concerned about, you know, how this is going to impact their crops for the future. If you're not on a well, you know, and you're relying on irrigation water, you're very concerned at the moment, and last year as well, you know. So, and a lot of our wells are drying up. I know at the time I worked at Bernalillo County, the major concern of our East Mountain residents was quality and quantity of water.
Mm-hmm. And George, you know, Middle Rio Grande Valley here, by the time the water comes south from, you know, the border, these farmers are hurting, huh, in Bernalillo County?
In times of drought, I think it's really important to focus on protection of the resource that we do have. And if you look at the way Bernalillo County tries to do that, extending the municipal sewer lines up and down the valley over the last decade has been a really important public health intervention that was really not carried out by a public health agency per se. It was carried out by public works agencies. But the extension of the sewer lines really helped protect the groundwater resource, because septic systems are a major factor in the contamination of groundwater. So as you go up and down the valley, the water resource has been protected by extension of the sewer lines, and in places where the municipal sewer lines don't go, there are agencies that regulate how septic systems are constructed and when they should be inspected and such.
That's the Environment Department, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so that just shows how public health really encompasses a lot of these different agencies and how they have to talk to each other. But protecting the resource that we have is really the important focus, I think, for public health and for environmental health.
Mm-hmm. Well, water isn't the only thing that's scarce in New Mexico. Access to healthy foods is also an issue with a wide range of public health impacts. George, in Bernalillo County, your folks work on health and social welfare to improve public health. What role does the county play in addressing issues of disease? And you talked about water, but food safety, coordinating.
Well, in Bernalillo County Health and Social Services, we have a team called the Health Protection Team, and we have a team called the Health Promotion Team. The health protection team is really that sort of basic environmental health function that the New Mexico Environment Department carries out in the rest of the state, and which the city of Albuquerque carries out inside the city limits of Albuquerque. But for example, right now there are a couple of major food recalls happening that are through the Food and Drug Administration and through the New Mexico Environment Department. So the health protection staff basically reach out to the establishments that might be selling this product to make sure that they know that it's been taken off the shelves and such. So that's just a very, very frontline public health kind of a thing to protect consumers from, you know, from products that could harm them. And then in the health promotion side, when we talk about healthy eating, we're working with local and federal partners to try to expand options for healthy eating in communities. For example, we're working on a mobile produce vending truck that would be kind of like a farmer's market on wheels. And we're working with Farm to School, New Mexico Farm to Table, in an initiative to get locally grown produce into schools. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just we're trying to expand the options for healthy eating in Bernalillo County.
All right, and I'm going to ask Lee about La Cosecha in a second. We have an email question, and you can email us at callinshow@kunm.org. It's from Suzanne Prescott, kind of a broad question. How does public health relate to work readiness, workforce productivity, and global competitiveness for jobs? So, again, food, disease, water, how it impacts our workers. Anybody want to take a shot?
You know, I'm looking at an infographic that was produced by the American Public Health Association, and it basically says that prevention means business, okay? Mm-hmm. And the main points that this infographic is showing, and I'll make sure that I can get that to you, is that if your community is not healthy, then you don't have a healthy workforce, right? So a lot of the things that we can do to improve health in the communities where people live and work and play can really be good for business locally. So, you know, as Bernalillo County and City of Albuquerque try to attract businesses, we have to be able to show that our workforce is healthy and well-educated. And that's so, you know, and education ties to income, and income directly correlates to health. So, yeah, so public health is an important part of quality of life and economic competitiveness.
Well, you know, as we all know, New Mexico is very rural in nature. How does Presbyterian Healthcare Services approach that range of public health issues related to access to healthy foods? Lee?
We have a lot of initiatives going on in some of our rural communities as well as urban. We find that even in areas like the South Valley and the Southeast Heights of Bernalillo County, there's still a lack of access to healthy food. So we're looking at strategies like supporting school and community gardens. We've partnered with APS and La Placita Institute to support their food corps members. We're supporting healthy cooking classes where people can learn how to cook with the produce they're getting from their gardens. And we're providing double value for SNAP benefits at growers market. So if you spend a dollar, you get $2 worth of produce. And one project that we're really excited about is community-supported agriculture, where people can have a share of a farm. Basically, you get a delivery every week. And there's an organization in the South Valley called La Cosecha, CSA, that half of their members are subsidized. And we're really honored to be a part of that subsidization. And in addition to getting a box of food, you also get recipes that were written by local community members. So you're really learning how to use the food as well.
Okay. Well, we're asking the question today, what is public health on the KUNM call-in show? What is your idea of public health? What do you think people need to expand their knowledge about in regards to public health? What do you want to know about public health? Call now at 277-5866 here in Albuquerque. That number again, 277-5866, or toll free 877-899-5866. And as I said, you can email callinshow@kunm.org. You can also post to our Facebook page, KUNM Radio, or tweet at KUNM News. So, George, let me go back to talking about the types, approaches public health professionals use when they work to increase the level of health in a particular community. You're well aware of that. There's been a shift of focus from individual behavior change to a model that looks at the quality of neighborhoods to determine public health. Explain that for us.
Thank you. I don't want to say that the individual behavior change model is not important, because it is very important. There's a lot of good science there that shows how people think about changing their own behavior, and that helps you work with people to help them change their behavior. But there's a lot of evidence in the last decade that shows that no matter how hard somebody wants to change their own behavior, if they don't live in an environment that allows that behavior change to happen, then you're just basically making it a lot harder for that person to actually accomplish the healthy behavior. And if I can give you an example, this morning I walked to this studio, and after I leave this interview, I'm going to walk to my office, and then I'm going to walk home. And as I crossed the street, I felt like the street crossings were well designed, and that I didn't feel like I was going to get hit by a car. I also didn't feel like I would become the victim of crime, okay? So just built into my day is automatic free exercise that I can get. And in other communities around Bernalillo County, that's not the case. So we're working with traffic engineers and land use planning agencies and, you know, transportation planning agencies to really look at areas where there are high rates of crime and high rates of traffic accidents with pedestrians, and working with them to come up with ways to redesign that infrastructure so that the healthy choice can become the easy choice for people in all neighborhoods.
Okay, and there's an email question from Maria Brasil. How do economic inequities impact health? You sort of just touched on that, George, right?
Well, you know, over the last few years, UNM, New Mexico Department of Health, Bernalillo County, and many other partners have worked on a project that's really gained some national recognition. And part of this was on the front page of the Albuquerque Journal recently.
Place matters, right?
Where there are maps that have been produced that basically, and this happens all over the country, where the places where the people have the lowest income also have the worst health outcomes. Okay? So it's very, there's a very clear socioeconomic gradient with health, okay? And I think the maps that were on the front page of the paper recently basically showed that there was a difference in life expectancy between different parts of town. So that sort of points to the things I was just talking about, where we can use the existing governmental infrastructure to improve neighborhoods to make the healthy choice the easy choice. So clearly, economics is a big piece of health, and we want to try to make sure that every community has the same opportunities at health.
Okay. Well, we're going to take a quick break. This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Deborah Martinez, and we're working to answer the question, what is public health? We want to hear from you. What do you think public health is? What would you like to see more coverage of by our KUNM Public Health New Mexico Reporting Project? Call now, 277-5866, here in Albuquerque, 277-5866, or outside, 877-899-5866. And you can email callinshow@kunm.org, as several listeners have done already, and our Facebook page, KUNM Radio, or tweet at KUNM News. We'll be right back.
Audio Revolution.
Audio Revolution.
Audio Revolution.
We'll be presenting stories from the Global Leadership Forum, a summer program at the United World College in Las Vegas, New Mexico. I'm Martin Soto, a local Santa Fe and former GLF participant, and I will be your host along with Blanco Ortiz. We'll be guiding you through the powerful stories and experiences of students from around the world. Personal stories by students from Japan, Nepal, Cambodia, and the United States.
Friday morning at 8 on KUNM.
As far as most of us are concerned, this is the voice of the civil rights movement.
I have a dream.
But you may have never heard of Dr. King's dream if it weren't for another man.
The problem can never be stated in terms of black and white.
Hear the words and wisdom of an unsung hero of the civil rights movement on State of the Reunion.
Sunday morning at 11 on 89.9 KUNM.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Deborah Martinez, and we're asking the question, what is public health? There are so many facets to the field, and that's why KUNM created a team of reporters to cover public health issues in New Mexico. We're launching our website today with in-depth coverage of a wide range of public health issues, from lawmakers' legislation to ban the sale of e-cigarettes to minors. That bill is on the governor's desk, to an increase in medical debt for some immigrants, and efforts to increase access to healthy foods. Check out the Public Health New Mexico site. It's publichealthnm.org. And we have a caller, Matthew in Albuquerque, has a comment. Good morning, Matthew.
Yes, ma'am. Thanks for having me on. My comment was that I questioned the validity of vaccinations in preventing disease, and the fact that no medicine that is not backed by corporations, you know, in other words, natural medicine, it can never be properly vetted because of the influence of corporations in suppressing all information. It's particularly about vaccinations I was talking about, where vaccinations they're problematic in a lot of senses. They're taking many vaccinations now and mixing them together and giving children like five and one. they've upped the vaccinations, you know, exponentially. Now the kids now, they get way more vaccinations than they used to, and so there's a lot of people are concerned about basically over vaccinating instead of just improving the child's health in general.
Okay.
You know, it's a regimen of antibiotics and vaccinations. Their immune system never has time to get strong.
Okay,
you know?
Matthew, thank you for your call. I'm going to let our experts here respond to your comment. And let me say, Jane Peacock is here to help us this morning. She's the director of New Mexico's Department of Health, Public Health Division. George Schroeder is Bernalillo County's Manager of Health and Social Services. And Lee Caswell is with Presbyterian Healthcare Services and also a board member of the New Mexico Public Health Association. So I think this question or this comment is probably something that, Jane, you could answer or address to Matthew.
Well, Matthew, we do understand your concerns, and children are given a lot more vaccinations than they were given even when you and I were young. But I think it's important to understand that vaccines, before they're ever licensed, FDA requires testing to ensure safety. This process can take 10 years or longer. And once a vaccine's in use, the CDC and FDA monitor adverse events through the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, which is called VAERS. Any hint of a problem with a vaccine prompts further investigations by the CDC. And if researchers find a vaccine that's causing a side effect, then the CDC and FDA will initiate appropriate action that may include the changing of vaccine labels or packaging, distributing safety alerts, inspecting manufacturers' facilities and records, and withdrawing recommendations for the use of the vaccine, or even revoking the vaccine's license.
Okay.
So, you know, I do hear your concern, but I think CDC is on it.
All right. Let's take a call from Cal in Los Alamos. Cal, you had a comment?
Yes, good morning. I was going to call in anyway and try to discuss transportation planning and public health, but one of the folks that you had speak earlier hit the nail on the head, and that is that in the built environment, we can't let motor vehicle level of service trump all other issues as far as designing our transportation systems, because when we do that, we create situations where it is just very inhospitable to walk or bicycle as transportation. As your earlier person in the studio said, he got free exercise just walking to the studio. And what I've tried to do in my work with the county is ensure that when we do design transportation, that we take personal health and public health on equal par with motor vehicle level of service, so that we do not actively discourage people from getting out of their cars and walking to their destinations. I mean, type 2 diabetes, cardiovascular disease are huge public health problems, and over the last 50 years, we've essentially built those into our transportation system and our urban design. We have to undo that.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you. And if anybody wants to comment, I'd love to hear that.
Yeah,
comment.
And you're calling from Los Alamos. I grew up there, and it is a great community to be able to walk to and from school, work. And so I imagine they're kind of a healthier group there. I'll let George respond and then Lee.
Thank you. That's a great question. It reminds me of work that's happening in the South Valley right now with respect to the National Wildlife Refuge, which was recently established there. We've got the first urban National Wildlife Refuge in the Southwest right here in the South Valley. And there's a lot of work happening now to plan for the infrastructure along Second Street that leads into this crown jewel that will attract international tourism, okay? If you look at other National Wildlife Refuges in New Mexico and in the Southwest, they're a huge tourism draw. So there's a lot of work now looking at the transportation infrastructure that serves the National Wildlife Refuge and the community in which it resides. So as redesigns for Second Street come up, they're really looking at bike paths and connectivity to the Rail Runner Station and just, you know, ways of making it so that automobiles are not the primary or only source of transportation options. So, like, you'll actually be able to ride a bicycle all the way from anywhere in Albuquerque to the National Wildlife Refuge, or to bring a bicycle on the Rail Runner and ride your bicycle there, or to walk there. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's just a really good example of how transportation planning and traffic engineering and public health and local communities voicing their concerns about this are really coming together. So I just think the work around the National Wildlife Refuge is an excellent example of this.
Indeed. And I know they're doing similar work in Santa Fe to make a complete track around the city. They're almost there. It's taken decades, I think, to get there. But Lee, you wanted to add to the comments?
Well, yeah, I just wanted to say it really reinforces the idea that any entity that contributes to the health and well-being of a community is doing public health. And I think we're doing a better job of bringing in these different partners to work on public health issues now. And that's a great example.
Mm-hmm. We have a call from Virginia in Albuquerque, and she has a comment. Good morning, Virginia.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I'm currently riding my bike to work.
Oh.
And I'm on a noisy street.
Well, we don't hear the noise.
And I have to catch my breath. I'm calling about the issue of child abuse and neglect as a public health issue. And I think the understanding of the impact of that has increased dramatically in the last couple of decades. And I'm sorry, I'm riding uphill. That's my breath. And the important points are that what we know from a landmark study known as the ACE study, the Adverse Childhood Events Study, is that adverse childhood events such as death of a parent, divorce of a parent.
Virginia, could you pull over for just a minute?
Yeah, no, I am pulled over. It's just that I'm still...
Oh, you are pulled
breath.
Over. Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
Sorry, hi.
Well, we could come right back to you if you catch your breath for a minute.
You know, that would be good because also I'm next to the freeway and I can't hear well. It can come right back to me.
Hang
That'd
on.
Be great.
We'll go to Thank Brett. You. We'll go to Brett in Santa Fe with a question. Good morning, Brett.
Hi, good morning. My question is centered on the issue of access to primary health or primary care. We tend to distinguish between medical care, which focuses on care of individuals, and public health, which focuses on a lot of the population-based issues that your panel is discussing this morning. One of the concerns I have is that here in New Mexico, especially like, for instance, with the recently enacted Affordable Care Act, we have increased funding for medical care, but we still have a lot of communities, particularly in our rural areas in New Mexico, where individuals don't have access to good primary care. They have good quality primary care, but they don't necessarily have an adequate number of primary care providers, family physicians, pediatricians, internists, family nurse practitioners, and the like, to address the needs of those communities. And I'm just wondering what your panelists think about what is the role of not only public health professionals, but the Department of Health and other state agencies to improve access to primary health care services.
Okay. Well, this might be a good point to point out that the New Mexico Department of Health has 54 public health offices around the state. And maybe, Jane, you could explain the range of services that are available for folks there and then tie it into the question that we had from Brett.
Okay. Well, Brett, thank you for your question. I think it's a really good one because public health is not primary care. So in public health offices, although we offer a range of services, including family planning, immunizations, children's medical services, and the WIC nutrition program, which is a preventive program, we do a lot of referrals to primary care. We also contract for about 85 primary care sites in the state. But we all know that we have about 1,429 primary care docs in the state, and we're still going to be missing about over 200 in order to implement ACA. So Brett's concern is a valid one. What we're doing is working on ways to expand the doctors that we do have, and I'm happy to say that some legislation just backed by the governor just passed in both the House and the Senate, and that's for certification of community health workers who are, you know, you might know them as promotoras mm-hmm. or community health representatives in tribes, but mm-hmm. they can help extend the reach of the primary care doc, if you will. And we're also looking at creating, that's a certification program we're very excited about, and Then also, once we get a basic certification of community health workers, we're looking at specialty community health workers who can work on certain kind of major diseases like diabetes instructions on the part of the primary care docs. We're also working for the governor's workforce agenda that's been at the state legislature this session, and we are working on expanded slots for nurse practitioners, expanded slots for primary care doctors.
Dental hygienists as well.
Yes, Weechi, six more slots. And so we are trying to expand that primary care workforce as best we can.
Okay. Well, what is your idea of public health? What do you think people need to know to expand their knowledge about it? And in regards to public health, what do you want to know about it? Call now, 277-5866. And that's 277-5866 or toll free, 877-899-5866. Or email us at callinshow@kunm.org. And also Facebook, KUNM Radio, tweet at KUNM News. And Lee wanted to add something to this.
Yeah, I would just echo everything Jane has said, but I would also talk about, include that healthcare is really changing what happens when you go to primary care and looking at different models like community health workers, looking at filling gaps with innovative models like community paramedicine and community EMS, getting paramedics involved in prevention and public health. Also, so when you see your primary care doc, what kind of resources are you getting? Are we focused more on treating illness, or are we looking at preventing illness? So really helping people self-manage their disease, prescribing walking, prescribing fruit and vegetable consumption, and other things like that. We just need to be doing things differently. And the Affordable Care Act and alignment with the Improving Health Initiative is really changing the way healthcare looks at things, and we do have more of a focus on population health now.
All right. And we got Virginia back on the side of the freeway there somewhere in Albuquerque, I think. Yeah. How are you, Virginia? We're talking about child abuse.
Good, thank you. Just noting that I'm doing my part by bicycle commuting to work.
Yay.
So the impact of child abuse, we know now, result in increased levels of teen pregnancy, substance abuse, criminality, decreased productivity in the workplace, very impaired readiness to learn in school, increased high school dropout. It has an enormous cost, both humanitarian cost and monetary cost to our society. There's an economist at the University of Chicago by the name of Heckman, who points out that the best return on the dollar that a society can make is to put it into child abuse prevention, which is my second point, that we now know how to prevent child abuse. So we have randomized controlled studies that document efficacy of early intervention, in-home intervention from prenatal onward, that can stabilize families and prevent child abuse. And I would also point out that New Mexico has recently reached 50th, that is worst in the nation for child welfare. So, and the children who are at highest risk for child abuse are those who are born into poverty, which is 47% of the children in New Mexico.
Yeah.
And once you're born into poverty and abused, you develop in such a way that you lack the skills to break out of the cycle of poverty.
All right. Well,
it is an enormous public health issue.
It certainly is. And we'll have our panelists address that. Virginia, thank you. And we'll let you get on to work this morning on your bicycle. Be careful out there. And Lee wanted to comment on the child abuse issue and some of her points.
Yeah, you know, there's a local organization out of Bernalillo County called the Bernalillo County Community Health Council, and they've done a lot of work over the years focusing on early childhood. They have a group called Early Childhood Accountability Project, and that group really worked to one outcome that they created was getting nurse family partnership here in this community. We've really found that nurse and community health worker home visiting are are a great way to start here. And, you know, Presbyterian runs firstborn programs funded by the state in Española as well as Socorro. And these really are, you know, home visiting for first-time mothers and providing the support they need to prevent child abuse and these adverse childhood events. Really important. If only we could have universal home visiting, what that would mean to our families and children.
That was one of the joint resolutions that would have been a constitutional amendment. I think it was turned down in this session. Our policy wonks like yourself may be going forward next year and trying to push, as we know, multi-year efforts are sometimes needed to get some of these initiatives passed and made into policy.
You know, I haven't been involved in that this year at all. I just know, you know, the great work that's been going on with our firstborn programs and that and Nurse Family Partnership, and that really when you're looking at funders, big funders like Kellogg and, you know, in the county, the way they're focusing their work, we're really looking at early childhood, and that if we, like what our caller said, if we want to have long-term impacts on health, we're going to have to start with
their babies.
Pregnant moms.
Yeah. Yes, right. And that will be the topic of our next segment. We're going to take a quick break first, though. This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Deborah Martinez, and we're exploring the question, what is public health? Joining us today are Jane Peacock, the director of the Public Health Division of the New Mexico Department of Health. Also, George Schroeder, Bernalillo County's Manager of Health and Social Services, and Lee Caswell, who's with Presbyterian Healthcare Services and on the board of the New Mexico Public Health Association. We'd like to hear from you. What questions do you want answered? What have you heard about public health that you're unsure about? What needs a brighter spotlight from the KUNM Public Health New Mexico Reporting Project? Give us a call, and we will be here with comments and questions, to your questions, perhaps, 277-5866 here in Albuquerque, 277-5866, or toll free 1-877-899-5866. We'll be right back.
Sunday afternoon, February 23rd, the New Mexico Symphonic Chorus returns to the National Hispanic Cultural Center singing gypsy songs by Brahms, Debussy's Trois Chansons, and selections from beloved Italian opera choruses by Verdi and Puccini. Roger Malone conducts an afternoon of choral splendor Sunday, February 23rd at the NHCC. Information at nmschorus.org. A message from the tax-exempt New Mexico Symphonic Chorus.
This week on This American Life, twin 13-year-old girls who do not get along.
I gotta see her when I wake up, when I go to sleep, and I don't like her.
By chance, their middle school is run by twin brothers, Ronnie and Reggie Richardson.
They're like, whoa, no, that's totally against twin code. Let's talk about this.
Seeing yourself and others, and where that leads this week.
Sunday afternoons at 4 on KUNM.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. We're asking the question, what is public health? And we'll go to Michael now in Tres Piedras with a comment. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, and thanks for this question. Two great things happen every year. In October, the cranes fly overhead south right over my head, and I hear them. And right now, they're going back north. And if you take one crane out of that flock, his health will go down. And we humans are the only species that challenge our God-given order, that the fishes live in schools and the elk, wolves, and every species is given an order to live in. And if you look at how we evolved over hundreds of thousands of years, it was as massive families that were part of an extended family that belonged to a man or that was part of a tribe or a village. And in that context, even if you were childless, you would spend at least 20 hours a week holding an infant. This is a very powerful antidepressant, as is caring for an elder. And Americans have a theology of individualism that results in terrible loneliness, regardless of where you are on the socioeconomic spectrum.
Hmm. All right. Well, thank you for that comment. Jane Peacock of the Department of Health wants to answer.
I really appreciate your comment, and I wish I were out there watching the birds fly over. I would say that you are identifying something that in our society we really need to work on. We do have a lot of single head of households these days, and children can be very successful, but they do require family. And so I don't know if you've ever heard of Michael Gurion's book called The Wonder of Boys, but it's a fantastic book about the three families that boys need to be healthy and successful in life. The first family would be that single mom or, you know, the single father. And the second family is the extended family. So, and that does not necessarily need to be relatives, but it needs to be extended aunts, uncles, mentors. The third family would be baseball teams, soccer teams, church family, synagogue family. And so any grouping where the child can get extended support and mentoring will help them be successful no matter where they're born.
Thank you, Jane. Well, let's look at a few other areas of public health work. Some other top public health achievements of the 20th century, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, include increased access to family planning services, fewer pregnancies, and fewer deaths of mothers and babies. So, Jane, I'm going to go back to you. How does this increase in access to family planning services impact communities in New Mexico? Mother and infant health are part of the mission of the State Public Health Division. Does the Affordable Care Act change the playing field there?
Well, yes, family planning services are part of the public health mission, and we do offer some prenatal care, although it's not available everywhere. We also offer our preventive nutrition services for pregnant, breastfeeding, and postpartum women. People were asking us that question about ACA and the impact on family planning, but I think it's really key to point out that even in Massachusetts, this transition of family planning to private providers took 6 years. And even after that six-year period, there are still people who will be uninsured, underinsured, and will fall through the cracks. So public health will always have some function in that area.
All right. And, George, you work with communities where family planning is an issue?
Well, when I think of family planning, I think of the teen pregnancy rate. And
second highest in the nation, right?
And just, you know, the trends overall are that when a girl has a child at a young age, she's less likely to complete schooling. And if you're less likely to complete schooling, then you're less likely to earn a living wage. So it's kind of a cycle. And I'm glad that the New Mexico Department of Health is working on it.
All right. We have an email question from Jody Larson in Santa Fe. She asks, about access to sex education in schools and abortion services. Family planning is, as you said, one of your topics, Jane. Those 54 offices they offer, and you have school-based health centers as well. Talk about those a little.
We do. We have 55 school-based health centers. We also have our 54 public health clinics where we offer family planning services in the local public health offices. We cannot always offer family planning services in school-based health centers because the school districts will dictate the policy. So surprisingly, a lot of what we do in our school-based health centers is behavioral health and primary care basic screening. I would like to say that we also offer service learning. We took our abstinence education money this year and we reformulated it into service learning projects for schools after school so that kids are mentored by adults in the community and shown what their career could be like. And we're increasing the focus on education and what do you want to do in your life? And, you know, let's not let a pregnancy get in the way of that plan.
Mm-hmm. But augment it.
Augment it.
All right. We have a call from Andres in Santa Fe with a comment. Good morning, Andres.
Hi, good morning. My name is Andres Mercado. I'm a paramedic with the City of Santa Fe Fire Department, and been interested in the topic this morning. I'm actually on my way to present a training for the department on a community health initiative we're taking on. For many, many years, the fire department has been tasked with responding to emergencies, and what we've realized is that most of the calls for through the 911 system are actually not emergencies. They're calls from people who lack access to primary health and do not understand the healthcare system and how to navigate it efficiently. And this has caused a lot of increased costs in the healthcare system and decreased outcomes in these patients' medical conditions in long-term medical care. We're trying to partner with Christus, hopefully La Familia, Southwest Cares, behavioral health and social professionals, substance and drug abuse counselors, and really tie that into the fact that we are sort of the boots on the ground and the front lines of finding a lot of these people who have a lack of access to the healthcare system. So I'm glad that this part of the local debate, and I just wanted to air the fact that the fire department is trying to be a part of this, and we hope to become a partner in the regional approach to a lot of these healthcare issues.
Thanks, Andres, and thank you for your call, and good luck with your presentation today. Lee.
Andres, I'm so glad you called. This is an issue that I'm really passionate about and have been fortunate to be a part of building curriculum and teaching at UNM and ENMU Roswell focused on community EMS. And it's a really exciting national and local movement that's happening because I really believe that EMS community gets public health more than almost anybody because they're in people's homes, they're on street corners, they're in workplaces, they're really seeing the failing of our communities and our healthcare system and our public health system, and they have so much expertise to bring to the table and so many skills to fill gaps that we're facing. And so thank you. And there is, I encourage Andres to contact me. There's a coalition of community EMS that is meeting quarterly, and we're really trying to learn from each other and build this movement.
That's great. And you can get Lee's number on our website, KUNM.org. George, you wanted to quickly add something before
yes,
we move?
Yes, thanks. I think it's just important to note that if people have stable housing, then they're less likely to use the EMS system and the emergency room. So there's a big effort now in Bernalillo County and the city of Albuquerque to really help people get the housing support that they need as a way of not only reducing costs but improving the health of that individual and the overall community health, because there would be savings at the emergency end of the spectrum and a greater opportunity to provide care at the primary end of the spectrum.
And that's what HHS says is the goal of the ACA, right? Glenn, we have you on the line patiently waiting from Jemez Springs. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for this. I want to put some human faces on what we're talking about. David from Jemez Springs drives to Jemez Pueblo EMS. Jennifer, friend, drives from Corrales to Jemez Pueblo. My wife and I go to nurse practitioners. Lori drives from Cuba over to Cañon, where I go a good hour drive. Myra goes to Kristen Ostrom, who East Mountains drives to Bernalillo another hour or so. People all over this state that so much rural, as was said before, are providing services to us out in the boonies, and it's so appreciated, and I'm glad the governor is backing more nurse practitioners in our state. So thank you all.
Thank you, Glenn. Well, mm-hmm. We're talking with Jane Peacock, the director of the Public Health Division of the New Mexico Department of Health, also George Schroeder, Bernalillo County's manager of health and social services, and Lee Caswell, who's on the board of the New Mexico Public Health Association. Well, obesity is a big health challenge in New Mexico. Describe the importance of obesity in New Mexico from a community public health perspective, Lee, would you?
To me, it's really a symptom of many things that we've been talking about going on. You know, the communities are not walkable or safe. We haven't focused as a healthcare system and as a society on preventing obesity and eating healthy food. We haven't been providing clear information to people. And there's huge factors that make it difficult to access healthy food. We're targeted by advertising that encourages us to eat other food. Our government subsidizes food that allows us to purchase really unhealthy food in an inexpensive way. And back to the mapping piece that we talked about earlier. Sorry, this is such a huge issue. You can really map. Communities, poor communities are targeted by fast food restaurants, and there's a lack of access to grocery stores and liquor stores are, you know, abundant. And so we've really not created an equal playing ground for people, and definitely have not made the healthy choice the easy choice.
Well, that said, that certainly is true. There are some successes, though, right here in New Mexico with programs that have received kudos and money to expand their programs. Jane, tell us about that pilot program in Las Cruces that has blossomed.
Well, and this is something after my own heart since I'm a master's level nutritionist. So I agree with what Lee's saying. We have a Healthy Kids New Mexico project in Public Health Division where we're working with 14 communities. 10 of those are counties and 4 of those are tribes, where we build state and local partnerships to expand children's opportunities for healthy eating and active living where they live, work, and play. And we know that healthy eating and active living are the two major lifestyle choices that can prevent obesity and consequent chronic disease. Obesity is the doorway into all the chronic diseases. So if we can work on obesity, we're going to save a lot of people's lives. Sustainable environmental and behavioral changes do require the efforts of the families, like Lee has been describing, families, schools, and communities. So what we do is we will work with the built environment. We expand opportunities for active living through environmental and system changes. We're working with the schools. They are lead in this project, and we increase opportunities for healthy eating and physical activity in those schools, like where the students grow gardens and they do the walk to school school bus. And then food systems, we work with access and the food systems, affordable, healthy, locally grown foods in rural and frontier communities. We're also working with childcare because kids spend most of their time during the day at that age in child care. So we support child care providers in making healthy eating and physical activity as part of their daily routines. So this project has some new data indicating that it is successful in reducing children's weight. And CDC recently released some figures showing that New Mexico is one of 19 states and U.S. territories to experience a measurable decline in obesity rates among low-income children between the ages of 2 to 4. Who participate in programs like our WIC nutrition program.
All right. Well, that is a mouthful, no doubt. No pun intended there. Well, we want to thank everyone for joining us today on the KUNM Call-In Show. Thanks to our guest, Jane Peacock, whom you just heard, the director of the New Mexico Department of Health's Public Health Division. Also, George Schroeder, Bernalillo County's Manager of Health and Social Services. And Lee Caswell with the New Mexico Public Health Association and Presbyterian Healthcare Services. Looks like both of you want to say something very quickly, if you would like.
Yeah. Oh, just along the lines of the obesity question, we're working with the New Mexico Commission for the Blind to change the content of the vending machines in public buildings so that there's more healthy choices in the vending machines.
All right. And Lee, did you have a quick comment?
Back to the family planning piece, I just want to point out that families look very different and that they can have strength in many different ways. And I would encourage you to look at work Young Women United's doing, teaching us about, you know, that all families can be healthy families.
Great. Thank you. Thank you all. You know, there were a lot of comments and calls from listeners on a broad range of public health issues. We couldn't get to them all today. Things like housing, gun safety, tobacco-related health problems. That is just a small example of how broad this field is. We will no doubt revisit some of these topics. And please, again, visit our website just launching today. Besides KUNM.org, publichealthnm.org. And if you missed any of today's program or you'd like to share it with your friends, the audio of the show will be posted online at KUNM.org. And again, you can also find previous KUNM call-in shows there. Email comments continue to at callinshow@kunm.org and find us on Facebook and Twitter. KUNM's Public Health New Mexico project is funded by the McCune Foundation and the Kellogg Foundation. Thanks to Jefferson White, our engineer today. Andy Lyman screened your calls. Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. I'm your host and KUNM Public Health reporter, Deborah Martinez. Thanks for joining us.